Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 352 of the Roguecast, recorded October 19th, 2021, with Chloe Chesapeake.
We're back, and we told you we were going to take a two-week break, and instead we took a no-week break.
Yep. It's just slightly weirder podcasts. One podcast last week without me, because I was on vacation.
Yes.
One podcast this week without Nick, because Anna's on vacation, and it just somebody's got to ring people up.
We do run a store.
Yeah. And I think we're going to try and bring Nick in by the end of this podcast to talk about one or two things.
Yes,
so we'll
you guys are going to talk about Halloween stuff.
We're going to cheat it,
yeah. But we're going to skip this, but there's some notable stuff in comics this week we want to talk about. But also, there was a little thing this weekend called DC Fandome.
Or as some people call it, DC Fandome.
What? Fandome? That's not a word.
That's true, actually. I actually never saw them really explain it, but I guess it takes fandom and puts it into a dome.
Is it like Thunderdome?
I mean, I guess you could argue. It's kind of dark like Thunderdome.
You enter there with all your hopes for DC, and then you leave your spirit crushed.
You did?
I did. Actually, I didn't go with any hope for DC.
Did you watch, you know, I just realized, did you not watch the Aquaman one?
Oh, no, we talked about that previously.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Had that already come out last week?
Yeah,
okay.
Like a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was one for Fandome, though.
Okay, but it looks, I mean, it's cute.
It's mostly just James Wan and, what do you call it, talking about it.
Yeah, this is the episode wherein you learn Randy doesn't like DC very much.
Yeah. This will come as a shock to people.
Every other episode we've ever done.
Although you've been a big DC whore for their comics for the last 6 months to a year.
Actually, it's
I believe some of your favorite comics this week, several of them were DC.
It's not that I don't like DC. It's actually the opposite. I really like DC's characters, and I'm really mad when they get it wrong. And I feel like the movie division and the TV division have mostly got it wrong. Except for Doom Patrol, which is delightful.
But that is mostly what seems like the announcements coming out of DC's Fandome thing, which was, Friday, Sunday?
It was a weekend.
They were making
thing,
some announcements.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't think we're going to cover the video game stuff that was in there. There were some trailers for, like, Suicide Squad game and all that.
Yeah.
But we're gonna talk a little bit about some of the movie trailers, and most of which were, like, not so much trailers as hastily concocted sizzle reels.
Yes. It did almost feel like they called up the directors, and the director's like, you want what?
Really, like, by noon tomorrow.
By noon tomorrow?
I think that let's start out with the first one we watched for the Harley Quinn TV show, because that seemed to be the least ready. They were literally showing, like, instead of animation, they were showing, like, roughs, sketches.
Yes.
Storyboards.
Yes.
Storyboards.
But here's the thing. They animated a full, like, 2-minute sequence of her and King Shark making dumb jokes.
Yeah, I don't know quite... I felt like they sort of missed their opportunity to do the kind of jokes that they're really good at.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like their regular writers, who are quite good, weren't doing this segment, or maybe their heart wasn't in it.
But it was just written by the marketing folks.
I mean, it kind of felt like it
They're like, oh, people like when Harley Quinn is meta. Let's make her meta.
Yeah. And see, the thing is, like, I'm pretty sure the show is going to be good.
Oh, I am too.
Yeah. Her and King Shark making slightly dopey jokes about how not ready they are.
Yeah.
And then showing a sequence that was only has voices over storyboards.
Yeah.
Not real inspiring.
Not great. But, again, I'm really looking forward to Harley Quinn Season 3, which is not a sentence I thought I would ever say previously.
Yeah. They just came through on that one. They had good creators.
They did. And then we got a teaser for Black Adam, which has The Rock, being his charming self.
Yep,
and then he's like the Man in Black, which, by the way, that's Johnny Cash. You can't do that.
He's going to make it the superhero thing.
It's not.
We'll see if it catches on, because it might. The Rock is pretty good at that kind of stuff.
But anyway, it's got, like, people discovering this ancient temple, maybe military guys, and then.
I have a feeling that there were two people who looked like they weren't military, maybe some archaeologists. Yeah. They got pressed into service or something, and then they find they summon Black Adam somehow.
And he, like, vaporizes some guy.
He vaporizes some guy just by, like, holds him and, like, he, like, drains his life force
and
from
then
or something.
Floating.
And he starts floating. They're gunning him, and it seems like, oh, they're probably not hurting him.
I feel like I wanted to, and I get that it's a teaser. I wanted to see him in the costume.
Yeah, he was wearing the cloak with, I think you saw bits and pieces of the costume under it.
You see his glowy chest piece.
but a lot of these ones, it does look like they had to concoct the sizzle reel in, like, a matter of 6 to 8 hours.
Yes.
And I think, you know, what it does, what where fandom may like it, or fandome, if you will, is just in the sense that it conveys, oh yeah, Black Adam's going to be this hard ass.
Yeah.
He's going to be Superman who kills.
Yeah, I'm, I didn't love the Shazam movie as much as everybody else seemed to, and so I'm not super hyped for this either. Although, I know they've got a good Hawkman in this, and they're, like, sneaking in the JSA, so...
Yeah, Pierce Brosnan is going to be Dr. Fate.
I'm hoping it'll be good.
Randy, did you ever actually see Shazam, or have you just seen bits and pieces on
our I saw Shazam in the theater.
Okay, that's right. What else we got?
Flashpoint?
Flashpoint?
Ezra Miller comes out dressed. I don't know what they were wearing.
It seemed stranger than anything in the movie.
Yeah, it did. And it also felt like Ezra Miller was like, yeah.
Felt like he might have just woke up.
And they're like, here's a thing we threw together.
Yeah, he kind of even sort of says it that way. Yeah. So yeah, they introduce it, and then the trailer. It essentially doesn't do much more than introduce the baseline concept of Flashpoint, which is...
Flash goes back to save his mom and somehow fucks up and causes Batman to be Thomas Wayne. Although in this case, he may have caused Batman to be Michael Keaton.
I think it's going to be multiple universes, and I think that is going to be, what is it, Universe 89, which I think I've heard is actually what they call it.
You know, if they were to do a...
I don't think Michael Keaton is going to be portraying Thomas Wayne, which, for those people who don't know, in the Flashpoint comic, and I guess the animated thing they did too, that is the alternate world version when he saves... Did he save his mom and that trickle-down effect?
Trickle-down effects caused a bunch of stuff. But also, Scott Snyder did some stuff with that in his run, or Tom King, one of them did. Well, it was Tom King, I think, had Thomas Wayne's Flashpoint Batman come into our universe or something.
Oh, did he? I'd forgotten that. All I remember is Azzarello did the miniseries.
Yep.
But I think this is going to be essentially, you know, for better or worse, it will be Flashback, I think, in name, or Flashpoint in name only.
Yeah.
The same way Civil War on the big screen had very little to do with the Civil War comic.
It's all so dark. It's all just so very dark.
It mostly seemed like they clearly the big thing they wanted to tease was Michael Keaton's Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sometimes a little almost embarrassing how much they have to kind of go back to on Batman. But that said, I am excited to see Michael Keaton as Batman. I just hope the writing is there, you know?
I just don't have any faith in them at this point. I don't know. I think... My issue with this is that looking at the DC Fandome stuff, it's either deadly serious or overly goofy. They can't seem to find that middle ground that I feel like Marvel hits so well.
Yeah, it is it is weird, and you know, the weird thing is, other than say what's the new Batman movie called? Is it just called like The Batman or something? Other than that, which we know is going to be grimdark.
Yep.
I don't know, like, the Aquaman behind-the-scenes thing was not grimdark. Mm-hmm. That was one of the few exceptions. I don't know that Flashpoint will be, although I suspect it'll have a good deal of it. But, like, you know, that may just be what they threw together. I think they have somewhat decided that that's what at least the vocal fans of DC want.
Yeah.
The vocal fans of DC are the guys who are like, DC is hardcore. They're go where Marvel fear to. And then I like to show them the clip of, Black Manta... montage scene of building his armor
to
Depeche Mode and having like wacky hijinks where like the lasers go off and he has to duck.
Yeah.
Like, that is pretty hardcore. but I don't know if. What else do we see?
There's two more, and that's the Batman and Peacemaker, and you cannot get more diametrically opposed than the Batman and Peacemaker.
Peacemaker is very much, I feel like the vibe of Suicide Squad.
It is, for good or ill, and I was disappointed in Suicide Squad. I liked it, but I had some stuff, I had some real complaints about it. I guess for me, there's a middle ground, and Peacemaker's too goofy.
Right. Actually, I thought he was a pretty decent fit for that movie. James Gunn sometimes does goofy characters, like Groot or Rocket Raccoon.
Yep.
And I felt he was within those bounds. It's a little weird to me that they want to do a show about him, and it seems like maybe want to entertain some depth for him, since he did turn out to, spoiler warning, be kind of a scumbag in that movie.
Yeah.
you know, like kind of like representative of the worst of America.
Yep.
When all was said and done, like he's like war crimes guy,
yeah.
not just Captain America turned up a little bit.
Yeah.
And so there, but it looks like they're going to show like was that Martin Sheen or
no,
or
it's somebody? It's
it looked
somebody.
Like Martin Sheen is
it's
his
not
dad.
Martin, it's not Martin Sheen.
Okay. But it looks like
who's T2?
Patrick, what's his name?
Yeah, Patrick, what's his name? I think that was who it was.
Oh, I could see that. I can't say his full name, though.
I don't know. I'm looking for it now.
Okay. But he's going to be like, you're going to see his like military hard-ass dad who maybe pushed him to be kind of who he was.
Yeah.
And, you know, is it bringing some nuance to characters is a decent thing, but I'm like, it's a weird call. I'm like, did the violent ultra-right guy need the nuanced backstory? That said, it looks like the kind of, you know, grim, you know, darkly comedic fun of Suicide Squad.
Okay, so the actor who plays his dad, I believe, is Christopher Heyerdahl.
I don't know the name. Maybe I've seen him in stuff.
Yeah, you definitely is one of those that guys, I think. You've seen him in stuff. He's been around. I'm looking to see if there's anything notable. Oh, he was the Swede on Hell on Wheels, which is a...
it's a television show that had that guy in it.
That guy. He played Jack Gruber in Gotham.
Okay.
I guess
I don't know him. He's a craggy dude.
He was in True Blood.
He's a craggy... he looked like a craggy mean man.
Yes, he does look like a craggy mean man.
What was interesting to me was that they brought some of the Suicide Squad supporting cast over. So John Economos,
yep.
The sort of, you know, behind-the-scenes guy, the kind of dumpy-looking dude in the lab coat, if you watch the movie... he's going to be in this as his handler.
Yep.
There's a woman who's an original character in it who looks a little bit like in over her depth, kind of out of her depth character.
So Danielle Brooks, who's in who plays Tasty on Orange Is the New Black, or did.
Uh-huh.
She's one of the lead characters. She's one of the characters, and she looks good. I just see Dave looking at the IMDb. They've got a guy playing Judo Master, so they are definitely going a little Judo Master and Vigilante are in this.
Yeah.
And that's a deep cut from Charlton. Yeah.
Vigilante is kind of. For people who don't know, that was like a somewhat lesser-known DC character in the 80s and 90s primarily,
yep.
who was kind of DC's answer to the Punisher, played kind of with Deadpool-like physical comedy for this.
Yeah.
As kind of a, like, and taking the role of, I guess, what's his name in the movie? Who's the leader of the Suicide Squad? Rick Flagg.
Rick Flagg.
Yeah, the kind of, with a rivalry with Peacemaker, but that's like maybe frenemies, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good-looking Vigilante costume, I'll say.
It is, but it's just also goofy.
It is goofy.
And I like silly comedies. This is not the vibe I want for my... Like, I guess when I look at DC, I want Superman and Lois, I want Stargirl, I want Doom Patrol. Like, all three of those are, what I would say, are good projects.
Mm-hmm.
And even those, Stargirl leans a little too much into the cheese, Lois and Clark leans too much into the CW schmaltz stuff. And Doom Patrol leans a little too much into being weird and not maybe telling its stories.
You want a little bit more of the right-wing messaging of Falcon and Winter Soldier?
Yes, that's all I want. That's all I want.
I'm just saying nobody's perfect, Randy.
Yeah.
I
don't know. I feel like they still haven't quite hit the vibe that I want to get. And I think that because they're shackled...
You think they're going to get it with the next project?
No, it's never going to happen. and that's why I'm not super excited about it anyway, because I know that... Where it could be better for me, it's still not going to be what I want it to be.
Yeah. I think I will probably... right now I don't have HBO Max. I probably won't be watching Peacemaker. But if people say it's fun, I will borrow someone's password and watch it.
That's the irony, Dave, is that I'm not excited for any of this, but I'll watch all of it for my TV podcast.
That's that private hell that you've made for yourself,
yes,
Randy.
Yes, it is.
You have only yourself to blame on that one.
Oh, that's true. but the other one is the Batman trailer.
Yep.
Which is so grimdark.
Well, since the first one had a very Mindhunter serial killer vibe, that first trailer or teaser that showed, like, I don't know, somebody pulling duct tape, like serial killer binding up victims and stuff like that. This one actually is less dark than that, although Batman is in full moody mode.
Yeah.
He's he's sort of as angsty as Batman gets.
Yeah.
But younger, but still kind of armored in the style of the Arkham games. Version of Batman. You definitely see a little bit more of Riddler in this.
Quite a bit of Penguin.
Penguin, who I thought was definitely the most fun-looking character of it. It's Colin Farrell looking like a grizzled mobster.
What's weird is that Farrell feels like he's doing a Danny DeVito impression. He's doing, like, this weird accent.
Well, he's kind of, it's more like he's doing a mobster.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not like, he's not quite the drooling tar man.
No, not DeVito as Penguin, Danny right. DeVito.
Yeah, no, a little bit, yeah, in the sense that Danny DeVito represents mobsters.
Yeah.
he's prominently featured in it. I don't know, did you think it looked good or not?
No.
No, not the whole trailer, just that particular thing, Penguin or whatever.
Eh, it's all right.
I liked it. I thought it looked at least as good as, like, Cockney accent mobster Penguin from the games.
That's the bar for me, and I feel like he didn't hit it.
I mean, in, like, you know, 17 seconds of scenes or whatever, maybe.
I don't know. Colin Farrell in The Gentlemen was great.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, okay, I know I like Colin Farrell in places, but this didn't do anything for me, so, yeah.
I've definitely seen Colin Farrell do, like, A-list work before. I feel like he could pull it off.
Yeah.
As the movie, this is another one where, like, it's the vibe is still very Chris Nolan, I think, or that vibe with, I'm not quite sure what I'd say is different about it. It's definitely taking itself as seriously as those movies did.
Yeah.
It's almost to the point where I'm like, oh, I wonder what happened if they had a Batman movie with, like, a touch of camp, you know? Even Burton's movies had, like, weird camp cropping up in them. And I feel like maybe that's needed. But I think, you know, I feel like this is a movie I am going to see. It's a big A-list Batman release. I'm probably going to see it no matter what. I'm curious to see how they play it. I kind of want to see what the story is.
I think I will see it if I hear really good reviews from a lot of people.
I'm going to bet it's going to get 85% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's my money.
That might be good. I think it's at least 99%. Yeah, I'm not excited for any of these things. I haven't seen most of the DC movies in the theater. I didn't see Aquaman. I didn't see Justice League.
Aquaman is actually the one I'm most interested in of all of them. And I think it was because it was kind of, even though it was a little all over the place, it was big and adventurous. And it's the modes that it switched between were kind of stuff we don't see too often with superheroes, which was like little Tomb Raider mode, little Lord of the Rings mode, little Game of Thrones mode. Weirdly, even a little bit, I'm going to say the big end scene was almost like that, like the old Bond movies where, like, a whole bunch of Spectre agents would fight a whole bunch of MI6 people.
Yeah.
They kind of did that with, like, all the Atlanteans versus all the bad dudes in the end. So, of the first one. So, I have some faith in James Wan and Bro Aquaman to come through for me on that. But it is, yeah, as there's sort of weekend when they could have, like, been like, that's amazing. It was kind of disappointing. Or if you're Randy, expectedly, horrifically disappointed.
Yeah, I wasn't disappointed. I was like, this is what I expect. I'm honestly still shocked at how much DC Comics I'm enjoying. So,
which we'll get to some of those in a few.
There's two more DC stories. They're not trailers, but they're apparently the Metal Men is in development with Barry Sonnenfeld.
Hmm.
I don't know if he's going to direct.
Did Barry Sonnenfeld do Men in Black?
Men in Black, Adam's Family, Get Shorty.
Okay.
It's
a pretty good pedigree.
And actually,
I don't know if he's done anything lately.
He'd be the guy to do Metal Men.
Yeah, Metal Men is for people who haven't seen it, a very Silver Age property, you know, with kind of like quirky robots all based around different metals that can transform, kind of almost like the T-1000 can, and they can sometimes they'll merge together into somebody, like a big dude, big robot.
Yeah.
But it's a very kind of retro vibe to it. I don't know. Is there any information, Randy? Are they going to play it like in the 60s
no
or 50s
idea.
Or anything?
He said, you've seen the kind of stuff I can do. This is what we're going to do. We're developing it.
Okay.
So, and then they're also doing they're developing, Reginald Hudlin announced that they're developing an animated Milestone movie. Which I kind of would like to see. I feel like Milestone really is missing Dwayne McDuffie.
Yeah.
I feel like Dwayne McDuffie was really the heart and the brain.
And
I feel like they're missing that.
Right. That's one they arguably can't replace because he is deceased. But it does occur to me, you know, I think that both you and I, like, the newer Milestone books, essentially reboots of the 90s launch titles, have kind of fallen, they're not bad, but they've fallen, you know, kind of notably short of what they could be.
Yeah.
So in that sense, if animation might be the way that these characters could break out, I'd like for a new generation to find them.
Yeah.
And not just at, like, the handful of people who, like, dig on retro material who are going to read a comic from 1992 or something. So animation could be that way. What do you think, Randy? Swearing or no in it?
Absolutely gotta swear.
I think they should have swearing, but maybe they should bleep it so that it, like, lands somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Hopefully no heads being punched off like Invincible.
Right.
you want the Milestone universe has an edge to it. But what's interesting is it also felt like kind of like a Bronze Age vibe.
Yeah.
There was lots of action and adventure. They never forgot to, like, deliver up on the cool stuff.
Yeah.
So, do we know anything about who's putting this particular one together? Or is it like, also, is it a singular project that's going to have all the characters, or
it's one project. Sounds like it'd be one Milestone thing.
Okay,
it'd
be like
probably the way to go, and then do more from there. But
yeah, so it's like Static, Epic. Icon.
Icon
and Rocket.
I think the ultimate way, I mean, they're not going to do this. It sounds like it'd be one movie, but I think the way to do it would be like 6-issue or 6-episode miniseries would be the way to do it and do the whole big thing.
There's certainly a lot of, you could do the origin story is pretty key to it, and so I think you need to do the big bang storyline. And then you can, like, you can have a through line where, like, some central character, let's say it's Rocket, is you know, searching in the mystery of the Big Bang or whatever, and, like, over time passes through, you know, meets Icon, bumps into Static. If they want to do Blood Syndicate, I think they should.
I think they should, too. But they seem to be left out.
Yeah. What's weird is that they kind of were the representation of the kind of, like, the biggest variety, because it's a big ensemble, a super-powered gang, staying together kind of for protection and for their own reasons.
They also have the only talking dog in the Milestone universe, and that's a shame not to have.
You don't want to lose your shot at that.
No.
anything right. else?
When Dog went into battle, his D-O-G-G was his name, he would bark, yo, yo, yo.
Oh, well, you know, nobody's perfect. Like I said, they had a Bronze Age vibe, that meant that every once in a while is a little camp.
Yeah. That's it for DC Fandom. We're going to take a break for just a second, then we're going to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of October 19th. And you realize how quickly we're racing toward the end of the year here?
Yeah, I've seen memes out there that's like, hey, just remind you, we're 3 months from 2022, and and then Skeletor runs off, and he's like, I'll be back with more disturbing facts.
As he does.
As he does.
I think the big one for this week that was kind of a pleasant surprise was Catwoman Lonely City number one.
This is a rare Black Label project that got off to a particularly good start.
Yeah, so this is artist Cliff Chang, who I forget what he did recently. Wonder Woman, but before that, I don't know what he did after that.
Right, he did Azzarello's Wonder Woman with New 52.
Yep.
And
I'm sure he's done something else recently we're forgetting.
Yeah, I can't quite think of it, but he is truly...
Paper Girls.
Oh, yeah.
He's coming off of Paper Girls.
Yeah, with Brian Vaughn. So he's a truly stunning artist. Mm-hmm. The question we had was, can the dude write? He's worked with good people, but he was just out of nowhere as a writer.
It turns out not only can he write, he can also color and letter. This whole thing is him.
Wait, he lettered it too?
Yep.
I was joking about that earlier.
This is one guy.
Damn.
Cliff Chang did all of this. He might have bound it. I don't know.
That's pretty good. Pretty good lettering.
So yes, this is an alternate future where a slightly older Catwoman. Basically, there was something called Fool's Night 10 years ago, in which Batman, Commissioner Gordon, and I don't know, Nightwing.
I think so, or Robin, or whatever. A lot of them died.
They were all killed, and so she's retired. But now she's like...
And by the way, she's just getting out of prison when it begins?
Yeah, I think so.
And she's 55. That's the specific age that they drop, which is kind of cool. I mean, I guess that's roughly what Dark Knight was supposed to be. I don't know if they ever dropped a number on that.
And then Harvey Dent, still looking like Two-Face, is now redeemed and he's mayor.
Yep. I thought that was I've only read half of this, so I don't know if he is
I can't quite tell if he's corrupt or not. I get the sense maybe, but he's got his like bat cops.
Yeah,
they've adopted the Batman, and it's like it may be a little bit slightly fascistic.
They're definitely kind of doing like a bit of surveillance state stuff. They're like, you need to, now that you're out of prison, you need to get like a you know, identifier bracelet and stuff like that. And I can't remember, Randy, is like Gotham kind of fallen to seed or...
No, it seems like it's actually safer.
Okay.
But Barbara
maybe
Gordon
a little bit at a cost.
Barbara Gordon is running against him for mayor, and she is in a wheelchair. It sounds like Fool's Night may have been a bit of Killing Joke. Like, I think it was Joker who killed Batman, and they put her in a wheelchair, that kind of thing.
Right.
And got Catwoman put in prison. But yeah, it's sort of like, there's a little bit of that old lady Selina. She's like having to, in her old age, get back in the game.
Right, she's still like, she can do her, like, she can do her rooftop flipping stuff.
Right.
But she's like, that one kind of, I'm going to feel that in my knees.
Yeah.
You know, again, somewhat echoing Dark Knight, but the vibe is not Dark Knight.
No, it's not. It's not like Dark
Knight. It's a very unique tone, and I can't compare it to too much. It does remind me a little bit of Brubaker's run.
Can see that.
In the sense that there's, you know, there's a sense of, like, her being a real person and not, like, just this mystic creature of the night or something like that. She's a real person who's a badass, who's a little on the ropes right now, but she presented as likable and cool in it, I thought.
Yeah. It's gorgeous. The art is really, mm-hmm. really good. So, yeah, if you like sort of those you know, older hero stories, this was a really good one. I liked it a lot. There is a new D&D Mindbreaker number one. That is Jim Zub returns along with his cast of career characters, includes Minsk and Boo and Delina the Wild Mage and all the people that he's introduced. And they,
you know, they'd had a few miniseries between the outings that Jim Zub wrote with this kind of like slightly larger than life band of adventurers.
I don't think anybody else wrote these adventurers.
No, they didn't. But it was just they were doing some other miniseries, and these kind of these characters were just off the grid for a few years.
Yep.
And I have to say, it was that those stories haven't really resonated with me. The other ones,
yeah, me neither.
So when Zub came back, I felt like he brought what I had wanted with him, which was the sense of fun D&D.
What's kind of fun is that the very first panel is like Minsk and Boo, and Minsk is yelling, "At last, my friends, we have returned."
Yes, a little bit meta.
Yeah.
And it is a tie-in to the new Baldur's Gate game.
Yeah, so you have to know there's Mind Flayers involved.
Yep.
And they return to... it looks like they're doing a little bit of that Invasion of the Body Snatchers kind of thing. It's mm-hmm. like they come back to Baldur's Gate, and it seems like some people have been maybe taken over by Mind Flayers or something.
Yeah, there's mysteries going on at their big, like, kind of like library temple thing.
Yep.
There's a Displacer Beast. If you wanted to see a comic where finally some people fight a Displacer Beast.
Yep.
Actually, two Displacer Beasts.
Oh.
There's a great panel of poor Boo, the hamster, has been frozen, and when he breaks him out, look, the little hamster is so cold. but it was another fun outing from Jim Zub. You know, he kind of writes a little tongue-in-cheek, but takes the serious stuff serious.
Yeah. Yeah, this is really fun, and reminds me of why I like the why I like this so much. Yeah. Okay, and then we've got Batman continues on with Fear State. There's a Nightwing. There's a Catwoman issue, and also there's a one shot Peacekeeper One, which is the Peacekeeper One is the guy who's the former Garden author in Arkham who's been taken over by Scarecrow.
Right. Right. I just realized that is Peacekeeper, not Peacemaker.
Right, different.
Because
guy.
I was wondering why are they specifically leaning into Peacemaker right now?
No.
Peacekeeper.
Peacekeeper.
Right. Right.
Peacemaker makes the peace. Peacekeeper keeps the peace.
Oh. I don't think he does.
But he's supposed to. Peacemaker doesn't make the peace either. then there's Nubia and the Amazons.
It's a 6-issue miniseries.
Yeah.
I can't remember if she it's weird. I was looking through the DC. I was in San Francisco for last week, and I was looking at the comic art museum that they have there, Cartoon Art Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a Wonder Woman display, and I was looking at the YA Nubia graphic novel.
Yeah.
And I couldn't remember if that was her origin. Like, she is sort of the lost sister of Wonder Woman.
That's right, yes.
And she's now in that, and if she is in here, she is now, like, Queen of Amazons, too, I think.
Yeah.
It looks like this is going to, like, take place maybe largely on Paradise Island and have mysteries and intrigues occurring on that.
Huh.
Anyway, haven't read it yet, but it sounds cool.
And then there's Gunslinger Spawn.
Right. I if I'm not mistaken, Randy, neither you nor I are Spawn heads.
No.
But it has to be mentioned because people like the Spawn still.
They do.
He still has chains. He still beats the bad people up. There's still demon stuff.
But this time he's got a cowboy hat and pistols.
But what if he had a cowboy hat and pistols? Yeah, I don't believe we can exactly make the pitch for it. You already know if you want to read Gunslinger Spawn.
You know if you're a Spawn head or not.
There's a bunch of cool covers from this. I will say the in general, Spawn costume plus Western regalia looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
If you want to hear more on that topic, ask Anna sometime. even though I don't believe she has read much or any Spawn, every time we get some Gunslinger Spawn art, she's always like, "Oh my God, he's so cool!" So I will let her speak for the Gunslinger Spawn.
On the other side of the spectrum, we got My Little Pony Generations.
Yes, finally a pony comic that brings together the current pony stuff, the cartoon that was now 10 years ago, 8 years ago, something like that, with the original '80s ones. I assume that they don't go at it hoof and nail, that they probably, their universes collide and they have some mutual threat or something that they have to deal with, as only a pony can.
You don't think it's like Civil War?
You're going to the glue factory. but yes, I have not read that one either, so maybe so. Maybe it is as dark as Civil War. Maybe an explosion has gone off and killed a bunch of ponies.
I haven't watched or listened to much of Critical Role.
Uh-huh.
But I know that I start recognizing some of them. So I know that Tal Duray is like one of the continents.
Right. That was the world book they put out.
Wildemount is another one. That's another continent.
Okay.
But I guess the world itself is called Exandria.
Right.
And this is Tales from Exandria. So there is a new Critical Role comic that is like maybe an anthology of different stories from Exandria.
Yeah, it seems like it's kind of what I would call lore heavy.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's not about... Well, I don't know if it follows like the characters like the Mighty Nine or the other characters from the show. Or if it's just like lore of like, you know, the backstory of the land, the gods, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. But if you like Critical Role, there's more Critical Role.
By the way, I did want to just quick mention as far as DC stuff. This week's Nightwing has some pretty major developments with Barbara Gordon, aka Batgirl.
Yeah.
And lots of stuff there. Well, not lots of stuff, but there's some stuff with the other Batgirls in there too. Stephanie Brown and
Cassandra Cain. Yep.
And the other Tom Taylor book was Superman Son of Kal-El, number 4.
Yep, both really good.
You might have heard some news about Superman, Son of Kal-El recently. Depending on what news source, they were either outraged or just like, this is a thing. The proper response is, this is just a thing.
Yep.
Good representation. And Tom Taylor continues to write the hell out of it. He's bringing in some of the characters he was from his Suicide Squad run, which is cool.
I like that.
And... I don't know, it's just, it's continuing to allow the character to not just be his dad, but short. He has a different ethos, but what's cool is that they at no point have they ever done anything like knock old dad
Superman or anything like that. Superman is someone to live up to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Loving Superman, Son of Kal-El, definitely recommending it.
There's also a Refrigerator Full of Heads, which is the sequel to Basket Full of Heads.
Yep, this is from the Hill House line of comics that was Joe Hill did, like, curated for horror miniseries for DC. This one, Basket Full of Heads, got a sequel, and this is it.
Yep.
And related to that, they did collect, they've been collecting those in hardcovers, and one of them came out in softcover this week, the Dollhouse Family.
Was this the one that was your favorite, I think, of the four?
Yes, although, ironically, a lot of them, whether we were shorted a week or something like that, I never finished this one.
I feel like they read better in one big collection, so.
No doubt. And this does have, in fact, at its heart, a weird 19th century dollhouse with antique dolls, and, I'm going to say sort of a dark family drama sort of building around it. I feel like the kind of people who like Mike Flanagan's stuff, Haunting of Hill House and Midnight Mass and stuff like that, should check this out. So keep an eye out for pick up the Dollhouse Family trade. I feel like I can just recommend it.
Yeah. Also wanted to mention that there is the Batman Last Night on Earth trade, which came out, has been out as a hardcover before, but it's out as a trade paperback this week.
That was the miniseries that Scott Snyder did with his old art partner from his long run on Batman, Greg Capullo. Yep.
It's their future Batman.
Their future Batman. Clockwork. Yeah, he was walking around with, like, the severed head of Joker?
I think that's right.
Something like that, and, like, a lantern? Yeah. I don't know what occurred in it. People who enjoyed that run seemed to like it.
Yeah. then there's Far Sector Trade, the entirety of the sci-fi Green Lantern book, which I kind of want to read. I lost track of, but I really like the idea.
I know that that was a particular favorite of Anna's, and I'm sure she'll pick that up. Yeah. Yeah, a very sci-fi bend on it. And that character, she has shown up in, like, the regular Green Lantern book on the regular.
Yeah.
So this is the place to kind of see what's up with that. And if you're, like, kind of a sci-fi-ish type person, to see a Green Lantern that's a little more sci-fi and less space fantasy, you know?
Yeah. Then there is the third in the Reckless series from Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, Destroy All Monsters. Dave, you know what the title means?
I don't.
So I found this out from Kurt Busiek, of all people.
I do know that it's a... Well, it was the name of a Godzilla movie.
That's why the previous one was called something evil. Basically, the first one, Reckless, was just named after the characters.
Right.
But the other ones, they're named for a movie that came out in the year that the book takes place.
Oh, so that's cool.
It sort of places it in time. Because he runs this old movie theater.
Right, it shows old vintage movies. Yeah. It just as a quick reminder for anybody who hasn't been keeping up with our endless love for the Reckless books and Ed Brubaker's crime comics in general, this is his kind of particular spin on, like, a private detective in the mold of, who is it, Randy?
I forget.
The TV detective, Rockford.
Yeah, but it's not Rockford. I only meant
in the sense that it's kind of an interesting, like a sort of quirkier detective, a guy who's not like a typical tough guy detective. In this case, he's kind of like a little bit of like, almost could have been like Stoner Beach Bum, but he sort of had actual training with the FBI,
well, he's a nice FBI guy,
to infiltrate like left wing groups, and then he kind of like defected effectively. And in that first one, there you find out there's a very tragic thing happened. And he's got this, like, a permanent injury from it. Yeah. And
he runs out of this movie theater in Los Angeles, and he has his assistant. And a lot of it is about their relationship, and he's looking into an L.A. real estate mogul, and it sort of gets personal. It's really good, as always with these books. I honestly think this is some of the best stuff Brubaker and Phillips have done.
Yeah.
You don't have to have read... I would definitely recommend reading them in order because I think the character stuff builds.
But you could stumble into any given one of them.
It's like a pulp book series. It's supposed to be like just like you know, Fletch or one of those. Like it's just you run into it. It's like, oh, the basics are very clear. This is his case. You can read any of them.
I feel like it's peak comic book craft.
Yeah.
Like just man, these guys. There's not like a bit of fat on this. It's all great storytelling, which isn't to say that the story doesn't like meander a little bit, but it meanders in really interesting ways where every scene actually you'll realize, oh, that had meaning and I just didn't know it at the time. And there's like, and it's fun and darkly funny sometimes, and it's the coolest.
Thor number 18, which Donny Cates assembles the Pet Avengers.
Yes. You know, Donny Cates is kind of known as, like, he's kind of a metalhead dude, You know, he's been writing Thor and Venom and, you know, kind of characters who are some kick-ass dudes. And I would not have expected he would be the one who would assemble the Pet Avengers in it. Which includes... most notably, Throg.
Throg is the leader.
And I suspect that this is, you know, came about because of his love of, you know, Walt Simonson wrote the definitive kind of cool, mythic, epic Thor run back in the 80s. But even in there, he had some humor.
Yeah.
And one of those ones was like a two-issue storyline where Thor got turned into a frog and had to spend like his life, he like had an adventure with the frogs of Central Park. Fighting off like a, you know, a war with rats and stuff like that.
Yep.
He got turned back into Thor, but it was like a giant frog instead of back into a giant man.
Yep.
And I'm sure that Donny Cates appreciated that weirdness, and he was like, "Let me give it my own shot with Throg."
Yeah. Death of Doctor Strange number 2 comes out, which has been really good so far, and then Not All Robots number 3, which is more Mark Russell's weird robot fantasy book in the future. Also, Hack Slash Volume 2 gets a hardcover this week, which, by the way, perfect Halloween time to catch up on the sort of...
Final
Girl kind of thing.
Yep, you could it would tie in if you were watching Halloween Kills or something as well.
And then one last thing. It is Wonder Woman Day on Thursday. We are jumping the gun a little bit, but basically anytime until we run out, there are three free Wonder Woman comics. There's a YA one, there's the modern series, and then there's... I forget what the other one is. There's three different ones.
Yeah, but they're arrayed on our new comics wall. We've got signs marking them as promotional stuff. So when you swing by, grab one of each for yourself.
Yeah. All right, that is comics for the week. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, Nick and Dave are going to talk about Halloween, both the concept and the movie, I think. All right, Nick has now joined us for the final part of the proceedings.
Yes.
Nick, where were you earlier when Randy was in rant mode about DC and I needed you?
Unfortunately, I was manning the register. But...
Although I think you weren't, super into the trailers. No. None of them were big grabbers.
No, I mean, I liked the Harley Quinn one because I like the Harley Quinn cartoon. But, yeah, the Batman trailer was just okay.
Yeah.
I don't need a... Spiral version of the Riddler.
You're gonna get it.
I'm definitely gonna get it, and I don't really need a super angsty Batman.
Yeah.
Even though I like Robert Pattinson as an actor,
that will end up having a good story to propel it, and the trailers are just only delivering atmosphere right now.
And I love that all these websites are putting up that the bat signal has a new meaning, and I'm like. No, it doesn't. It's had that meaning. It was supposed to warn criminals that there's somebody. I mean, that was half of its thing.
Yeah. And we should stay on topic though.
Okay.
We're here to talk about the movies. And
see,
TV
now I'm
shows.
Ranting.
Yeah, I know, right? So we're gonna do our topics here, and I believe the big thing we're gonna talk about is Halloween Kills.
Yes.
The second part of the new Halloween trilogy.
Yeah.
But before we do that, Nick, you watched a lot of Halloween stuff over the last week, one or two of which I also saw or have seen.
Yeah.
So I'll just weigh in on these if you want to kind of... We're going to do a lightning round of what you've watched,
yep.
And then we'll close out with a spoilery review of Halloween Kills. It does have some kind of fun twists and turns, so if you're thinking about seeing it, I will say we broadly recommend it. And you should just watch it and not listen to us.
Correct.
All right, lightning round movies. What do we got?
Okay, so I'm doing kind of the 31 and 31 days movie challenge.
Yeah.
Of course, some of those are going to be condensed to the weekend, so that's why I've watched so many.
Yeah.
I'm just powering through it. I'm sure I'm emotionally scarring my wife, who's like, can we watch something else other than a horror movie? And I'm like, no. We must continue.
Hellish light in your eyes.
So I'm lightning round. I am going to say, start out with One Cut of the Dead. It's on Shudder right now. Mm-hmm. I don't like zombie movies. This is a zombie movie, Korean.
Mm-hmm.
Watch this movie. It is.
We talked about this a few years ago.
Right.
And it's one to avoid spoilers.
Yes, just go in cold. There is something that happens. It is... I didn't expect it, so... But other than that, I'm not going to say anything other than it's a really good movie.
I think we can kind of say that they're filming a movie about zombies and something happens where, zombies appear.
Correct.
And you're left to try and to take it from there.
Yeah.
And you may... My impression was... You might be watching it, and almost for half the movie, you might be like, well, this is fine.
Yeah.
But it's nothing amazing. But it comes together in such a strong way in its third act that you are probably going to be left with a grin on your face.
Exactly.
Almost certainly.
So, yeah, that's on Shudder. Then I watched the movie Blood Red Sky, which is on Netflix. It's a German film about a mother and... son flying to America because she's a vampire and there's somebody there who will help her understand sort of biology and kind of getting around this.
Is this a newish movie?
Yeah, it just hit Netflix not too long ago.
But was it theatrically released?
No, it was just straight up Netflix. The big star in it is Dominic Purcell, who played Heatwave in the Legends of Tomorrow.
Okay, not a giant star, but no, I liked Heatwave. No, he was a super fun character.
He was in Prison Break as well, and yeah, he's really fun. But yes, they're doing this, and then terrorists take over the plane. So it's
terrorists take over a plane, then not knowing that one of the passengers
is a vampire. Yes.
Okay.
There's some interesting concepts. There's some interesting diversions from what vampires traditionally have been.
I guess at this point, nobody does a vampire or zombie movie without doing some little tweak to the mythos.
Yeah, you have to. It's maybe not the best, but I liked it,
way to pass a couple hours if you're kind of keeping the expectations moderate.
Exactly. And it is in German, and the English characters definitely speak English. They're not doing that, but right. Because it's on an international flight, you can kind of get around certain things. And right. I actually thought that was pretty interesting.
It's a fun premise. That sounds fun.
Keeping with the foreign films, I'm not going to mention too much, but I do want to mention the movie Oxygen, which is on, I believe, Netflix. Mm-hmm. It stars a couple... who?
Is it actually horror?
It's suspense horror. And
is it sci-fi?
It's got a little bit of a sci-fi bent to it.
Okay.
But it's directed by Alexander Aja, who did Crawl, and...
The remake of Hills Have Eyes.
Yes. So
and he did what I think is a slightly underrated horror movie, Mirrors.
Yeah. So if you know him, you kind of know that he is very good at building tension.
Yeah.
And the way he shoots films is very interesting.
Yeah.
Like I said, this is Melaine Laurent, who was in Inglourious Bastards and Now You See Me, and it's very simple, but a very interesting premise about this woman who wakes up and is sort of a medical pod, and she has to figure out
who, cryo sleep tube.
Yeah, a little bit, and she has to figure out why she's there and who she is because she doesn't even remember who she is.
It's a pretty classic kind of opening for a suspense story.
That one I highly recommend. It's a lot of fun. Okay. The less you know about it, the better.
Okay. I have found that director, while not my favorite horror guy, has come through a fair amount, and Crawl is a lot of fun.
Oh, Crawl's great.
Definitely everybody should watch that and see a giant gator movie. cool. I'll check out Oxygen, right?
I've never seen the movie Event Horizon. I remember watching trailers for it, in the movie theaters. Yeah, it was actually late 90s. It was 97, I think.
What do we got? Sam Neill.
Lawrence Fishburne.
Yep.
Actually, it's a pretty solid... what's his name? Lorca.
Jason Isaacs.
Jason Isaacs. He's in it. It's directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, so...
You may know him from Mortal Kombat.
Yep.
The Resident Evil movies?
Yep, he did the Resident Evil movies. The first one, at least.
But this is maybe his kind of... In some ways, I seem to hear it as the most highly regarded of them.
Yeah. I never knew much about it other than spaceship, terror... things go bad. And I'm okay, concept-wise,
it's
not...
It's kind of Lovecraftian, right?
It has a Lovecraftian bent. It's about... I thought the concept was interesting about a ship that was supposed to sort of map out a new galaxy, a new place to live, using a new drive that basically burrows a wormhole in space, or a black hole in space, and travels a far distance, which is pretty much done in the first few minutes mm-hmm. of setup. By way of Sam Neill, who is the person who created this technology, I was I'm kind of in. And it's definitely a 90s horror because it has that kind of time feel of super gory. And it was trying to sort of push the boundaries a little bit, mm-hmm. but I liked it. Yeah. It was a little depraved at times, but for kind of a Cthulhu, so crazy that it's going to tear out people's eyeballs and things like that.
There's a little bit of his, because he's been in another Lovecraft movie, The Mouth of Madness from John Carpenter.
Yeah. Which is, I've actually never seen.
Oh.
It's on my list.
You might want to sneak that one in and that, you could combo it and see what you think.
Yep. But Event Horizon was on HBO Max. I love the cast, so I don't know if I heartily recommend it, but I recommend it.
Okay.
It's good.
My memory of it is that I liked it okay. I think I know a lot of people who like it quite a bit, so I think I'm actually in the minority in like just liking it okay. It's a good one to have seen, though, and one day I want to revisit it too.
I revisited I Know What You Did Last Summer because we talked about it a couple podcasts ago, and the TV show just hit, which is getting horrible reviews, and I've realized that original movie sucked. It's really bad.
I kind of have wanted to see it. Is it even worth seeing just kind of to enjoy some 90s, or should I just skip it?
If you want to enjoy some 90s and really bad overacting, you can enjoy the exploits of Ryan Phillippe and Sarah Michelle Gellar and Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Is that half the cast of what was that?
Cruel Intentions.
Cruel Intentions.
Yes.
Yeah. weird. I mean, they're both.
Oh, and solid, Freddie Prinze Jr.
They're both solid actors.
Yeah. It's just the times.
Yeah.
It was just like, let's make a horror film. Let's get pump this out at the cheapest way possible. The bad guy's not even that scary. They don't even really. It's not even a good like.
Oh.
It's a guy in like a rain slicker and a
is a
fisherman
like the book guy or whatever.
And he uses they use the cliche story about the hook escaped mental patient.
Yeah.
Of course they twist it and like somebody remembers it differently.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
But. I guess, you know, the part of the deal in the 90s is that because of Scream and stuff like that, they seem to be doing the meta-horror. You know, like, take some old stuff and spin it a little bit, and teenager it a little bit.
I will mention a really messed up one that's on Shudder right now called The Loved Ones. It's an Australian. I put horror in quotation marks because it is horrific, but it is very disturbing and violent. It's about a guy who has been through a traumatic... a high school... guy who's been through a traumatic experience losing his father in a car accident that he is partially to blame for.
Okay.
And then he gets asked out to sort of a prom by a girl, mm-hmm. and he turns her down, not in like a horrible way. He's just already has a girlfriend and is going with her. Mm-hmm. And this woman is insane.
Yeah.
Like literally clinically, and kidnaps him and does horrible things.
This is like the Australian Audition.
It is a little bit of like the Australian Audition. It was bizarre. It was the director's first movie.
Now, I actually will say this. I liked Audition.
Yeah.
Audition was actually more thoughtful than I thought, and really only turns hyper-violent kind of near the end. It doesn't like sort of linger on it that much. It sounds like this is maybe a little
I feel like
more
this is a little bit more manic Audition.
Would you call it exploitative?
I think it could be called that, yes. Okay. There's some pretty depraved stuff.
Maybe a trigger warning for people on this one.
And
but okay, I might consider catching that at some point.
The next three I think you've seen. I watched Old, which is M. Night Shyamalan's new film.
Yep. People stuck on an island cove where they seem to be aging, a year about every two hours?
Yes, a year for every 2 hours.
Yep.
It's character-driven in the sense that you kind of get it from a single family's perspective and a few people who seem to be at the same resort.
And with, like you, I guess I, do we not, we don't want to spoil it.
No, I don't want to spoil it.
It's not like a big twist Shyamalan movie, but it does have its twist of sorts. And some reveals to be had about the people that are there that are kind of fun.
I think if you're a fan of his in any kind of fashion, if you
and I are maybe both a little bit apologists for him.
We are.
I
have a fondness for a lot of his movies.
I mean, the only ones that I kind of don't really want anything to do with are, like, Lady in the Water and what's the tree one?
Oh, crap. I actually watched that one because...
I call it M. Night Shyamalan's Death Wind.
I have some fondness, though, because...
The Happening.
Because Mark Wahlberg, and is it,
Zooey Deschanel.
Yeah, it's Zooey Deschanel. They're unbelievably overacting.
Yeah,
it's so bizarre.
Like, not like really chemistry between those characters.
No.
And it just seems like both of those people I've seen do good performances, But, like, they seem to just be out of their element here and not know what to do with his weird kind of quirky scripts.
Yeah.
Anyway, but oldest, may, almost everything else has some merit in my eyes.
An old... If you don't like his storytelling, and he definitely has his tics, the aging makeup and sort of that is really good.
Yeah.
And, honestly, it's just the kind of bottle episode movie where it's one location... for the most part, I think is an interesting way
to
do it.
It's like a deeper dive on a Twilight Zone episode where you're going to explore a little bit more of the implications of what's going on. Pretty solid cast, some weirdly quirky dialogue, but I think I'm about where you are, Nick. I would, I'm going to recommend it, but like if you hate Shyamalan,
you're not
going to
like
it. But if you kind of like Twilight Zone-y stuff and you've liked some of Shyamalan's stuff, I think it's worth a look.
Yeah, I agree. And the next one, I don't know who I'm going to recommend this to, but this is Mandy. I did not get a chance to watch this in theaters. I don't know why. I like Nicolas Cage, even when he's doing some of his more stupid films.
Yeah.
This one got rave reviews by a lot of people.
Right. Don't you think, Nick, that I've always said it stands somewhere between being an art house movie and a grindhouse movie?
I think that's a good summation of what it is, although I feel like it leans more towards art house film than...
It's very slow for portions.
It is.
It's a strange... It starts out as almost this strange meditative love story, as I recall, between... They're living out in the wilderness. Like
He's like a...
In the woods.
A logger, and she is a writer artist, I want to say.
Or maybe she does paintings for like sort of schlocky fantasy novels.
Yeah, and it's in like the late 80s.
That
because,
sounds right.
Because I know they open up with like Ronald Reagan on the radio.
Yeah, that's right.
It's really weird. It's about.
But it's also very simple in a lot of ways. It's just that it's like surreal events.
Yes. It's surreally told, but it is about a religious cult killing his girlfriend and he wants revenge.
Yeah. Like, real simple on some level, surreal as hell on others.
Yeah. There's him going nuts like you would expect Nicolas Cage to go have his nuts moments. But there are, like, elements of, like, the part of the cult that gets hired to find them is, like... Weird kind of pinhead-looking demonic biker gang.
You actually see them behind the scenes and stuff like that. It's
that,
almost like I think
that brews their own LSD. It's just
it's
bizarre.
A callback to like 70s, I think, kind of cult movie exploitation movies. And as I recall, again, I don't have strong memories of this, or like it's so dreamlike in my recollection that it's kind of hard to pin down. But as I recall, there's sort of a sweetness to the early scenes with them.
Oh, yeah. There's even a Galactus reference. It's him saying that is his favorite planet. And she responds
she calls
like...
him out.
Yeah, she calls him out. That's not, Galactus isn't a planet. And he said, but he eats planets. So, yeah, there is a softness to it.
At least in the opening.
In the opening. And after
it's
that, it gets...
soft after that.
After that, it gets very dark.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I think I enjoyed it. I think I messaged you after I watched it, and I was like, I don't know if I liked this movie or if I outright hated it. I came down on liking it, it more than I thought I did.
I've run into both sides of it, including people who really hate it and some people who, like, love it to pieces.
Yeah.
Well, so
it's kind of just ethereal. It's very kind of all over the map.
There's animation in it.
There's animation.
There's hyper-violence.
There's an ending
chainsaws.
That I don't know if really makes sense.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I'll need to rewatch it again at some point. If any of it, I think people listening will be like, that sounds like a good trip to me.
Yeah.
Or they'll be like, nope.
The other one is a movie you recommended to me years ago that I never got around. It's from 2006. I forget where it's on. It might be on Shudder right now. Called Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon.
Yeah. It's like a mockumentary.
It is a mockumentary. Well, I mean, it's sort of a documentary about them following a serial killer, a kind of Freddy Krueger.
A slasher serial killer.
A Freddy Krueger or Jason Voorhees.
Yeah, almost like if you did like a ride-along with a cop, but instead of a ride-along with a cop, it was a ride-along with a Jason
But
Voorhees.
It feels like it was his idea, and he approached them with the idea.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And they kind of go along with it they're not comfortable with it. I mean, they definitely have that kind
of... They're student filmmakers in college, as I recall. And they're doing stuff like, I mean, this is a comedy, but it's kind of a dark and weird kind of comedy.
Yeah.
And there's everything from him, like, talking about all the cardio he needs to do to keep up with people that are, like, running through the woods from him.
Or the conversations with his, like, adoptive parents.
Yeah, it's almost like if Leatherface, now retired and an old man, was, like, had been, like, the mentor to Jason.
Yeah.
And when he sees him, he's like, come on in, son, we've been missing you.
It's so bizarre.
It's really quite funny, I think, at times.
It's funny, but it's also, it's not, there's like, dumb.
There's just enough realness to it that it feels a little menacing sometimes, too.
Yeah. But I don't want to talk too much because I don't want to spoil some of the stuff in it. I think it is definitely one to seek out. You were right. I was wrong for waiting this long.
Glad you liked it. Yeah, that's one of those ones I'm always happy when someone encounters it. I think horror fans of any stripes, even if, like, I'm not a big serial or slasher movie fan.
No.
But this was a great encapsulation of kind of how those movies work.
Yeah. So, speaking of slashers, let's get to the meat.
Is it time for the big one for Halloween Kills?
It's time for Halloween Kills. If you like Dave said, if you don't want to be spoiled on this, get on out. Enjoy it.
Yep.
But, yeah. What did you think?
I liked it better than the previous Halloween movie. And
interesting.
I liked that one solidly, but I think this one was a little more unexpected for me. So in the previous, you know, they did a Halloween in, like, 2018, right?
Yep.
And their new canonical timeline that it made was, like, the only Halloween movie that counted prior to that was the original from 1978. So if you're going to watch these movies, you'd watch the 1978 one, then just jump to the new trilogy.
Right.
And that had an aging Jamie Lee Curtis still seemingly stalked by Michael Myers back to the old town of Haddonfield,
yep,
Illinois. But her kind of, like, setting a trap for him and kind of being a badass. And it also had her generations of her family. So there was her daughter,
yep,
and granddaughter.
Exactly.
And I thought it was well done. It ended with her having set a trap for him after going through a lot, like a very grueling previous movie.
Yeah.
And seemingly trapping him in this burning house, only to see as they're driving away, like, fire trucks going, and
yep,
she's like, no, don't! Don't put it out! Let it burn!
This is Michael Myers. You know that he cannot be stopped.
Right.
Even
though he's usually not portrayed as quite as supernatural as Jason is sometimes.
No.
But he is sort of an unstoppable killing machine, and they give him some killing to do in this one.
He lives up to the title. He definitely kills a lot of people. But I think, I don't know if I completely agree that it's better than the last one. They're very similar to me because they're kind of two sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
This one is about Michael and the first one was about Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah.
As sort of, the first one was her kind of dealing with what had happened to her, how that event basically scarred her for life.
Right.
Like, she became this person. She's become this person who, her goal is thinking that Michael is out to kill her. That
right.
She is the one thing that he wants.
It was the same way Sarah Connor was kind of destroyed by the Terminator prophecy, so that in Terminator 2, she was just this machine.
Yeah.
And she had lost a lot of humanity. That had kind of happened to Jamie Lee Curtis's character. What's her character's name?
Oh my God.
Laurie Strode.
Laurie Strode, yes.
So Laurie had become kind of broken like that, and her daughter was kind of trying to get her out of that.
Well, she hadn't seen her daughter in forever because they basically had a breakup because she acted like this. And she'd sort of gotten together with her granddaughter every once in a while, sort of built a relationship with her. But, yeah, this Halloween Kills is Michael's, in a lot of ways, Michael's story.
But also the ensemble cast of the rest of Haddonfield.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I liked is, to some degree, I sort of expected the previous Halloween to be what it was. And I have seen Sarah Connor embody that kind of genre movie heroine who went from being kind of like a scream when she's chased person to a badass.
Right.
But still kind of a loser humanity.
Yeah.
So I'd sort of seen that. I felt like I'd seen that story told in some ways in T2. But this one was kind of about the group of survivors, the wide variety, and does all these direct callbacks to, like, the kids she babysat for in the 1978 original, some of the police officers you saw, like the sheriff and stuff like that.
The kid that ran into him and escaped without, like, no confrontation, but he just disappeared.
Right. And so they, the movie I thought was going to just begin with what the trailers had shown, which was Jason versus a bunch of firefighters.
Yep.
Which you do get.
You do.
I said Jason. Michael Myers.
You do get, but it is like...
That's like 20 minutes into
it. It is.
They show all these flashbacks to 78, the 78 movie, but they're cleverly done so that they're like mostly new actors recreating them, including Loomis, a.k.a. Donald Pleasance, the
yep.
gun-toting psychiatrist prone to saying things like, "The evil has returned!"
And stuff very like trigger-happy.
Yes, he was a... He was like a role-playing gamer in a horror game, RPG, who knows what they're up against,
yeah.
and he's like, "I'm going to put a bullet between the killer's eyes." And that role gets to, by the way, be taken over to some degree by Anthony Michael Hall as one of the grown-up kids that Laurie Strode babysat
yep.
for in 1978.
Well, let's talk about that opening, though. They did a really good job of doing the same filters and making it feel like that 70... Well,
absolutely. I was watching it with my brother, and we're both big fans of the 78 original.
Yeah.
One of the few slasher movies I really love. And he was like, "Is this lost footage? Like, did they just have some footage they didn't use and they repurposed it for this?"
Yeah.
But it kind of, like, once you watch it enough, you're like, no, this is clearly new footage, just very well done. They got an actor who looked like Donald Pleasance, did some makeup on him, and kind of did the sort of cast him in enough shadows and stuff like that you're like, that looks so much better than if they had done CG or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, I don't think you need a ton. I mean, is there CG in this movie? I mean, other than like the gore, like the added.
I suspect that they might have done a little facial tweaking with CG.
Yeah,
but like not so I would notice. Like I definitely can't say they for sure did it.
Yeah,
but those characters were all traumatized, and because the events of the previous movie had happened, and you know people are like hearing that Michael is back in town. They're like at a bar kind of getting drunk, several of the survivors, and kind of having a survivor's party.
Right.
And it's kind of melancholy and a little bit silly, but also kind of melancholy and like raise a pint for lost ones and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And when they find out he's there, they're like, they all start picking up bats and stuff, and they're like,
rallying
"Evil
the
dies
troops.
Tonight.
Evil dies tonight is the mantra."
You might hear that more than once in the movie. It might even remind you of certain catchphrases, "Make America Great Again,"
sure.
that get out of control. And that's kind of one of the interesting subtexts of the movie.
Yeah.
Thematics is mob violence and the danger of it. But they also, like, you know what's weird? They spend a fair amount of time making some of the victims in this, including a bunch of new characters, too,
right.
kind of likable. They're rather diverse. There's an interracial couple. There's
yep.
a gay couple.
Yep.
There's lots of innocent people. And believe me, almost nobody makes it out. So it's kind of too bad because they're some of the more likable victims I've seen in a slasher movie.
It's true. But when you buy Michael Myers' house, I mean, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, the gay couple was my favorite.
Yeah, they're great.
Big John and Little John were both funny and sympathetic characters. I loved when they kind of like got pranked by some kids and then like kind of like get pissed at them and stuff
yep.
like that. And there are also some little shit kids in there.
There are.
But Jamie Lee Curtis takes a back seat. She's in the hospital from the previous movie
yep.
and in terror that Michael is coming for her. And I don't know if we quite want to say, but there's some reveals to be had about that she might not quite be
right.
about that, that there's something else going on. I also like those kind of surprises.
Yeah.
I was surprised at how big a role the supporting characters played in it. I was surprised at the kind of additional development they did for Michael. There's a scene where a crowd surrounds him, ready to kill him. And I was like, and he's unmasked in it.
Yeah.
And that's another big thing is like he seems to almost be, when the mask is removed, when his true face is seen, he seems, it's like his kryptonite.
Right.
He needs the mask to be who he is. And I was like, at that point, I was like, I really don't know what they're going to do here. And that was kind of an exciting thing to be. It reminded me of in the previous movie when you see him at the asylum and you just see a view from behind so you can kind of see the back of his head.
Yeah.
And he's clearly unmasked for the characters to see, but you, the viewer, kind of never quite get a good
full picture.
And I'm like, oh, they made this guy so kind of unnerving to be around that it's cool when they do something like that. And I like not knowing what's going to happen next, even though these slasher movies are formula.
Yeah, they are. But
and it is formulaic in some ways. I'm not saying this is some big,
no.
like, wow, what a what a reinvention of the slasher genre.
Yeah. This did pretty darn well this weekend, both on just regular theaters. I know it raked in like $50 million, nice, which is really good for...
Horror movies sometimes can do pretty good because they tend to be low budget ish.
If you have Peacock, you can watch it at home.
Yep.
Because they decided just to put it on there for fun. I don't know why, but thank you
for
very
Peacock
much.
Oktoberfest.
Yes. there will be a third one.
Yep. I'm actually curious to see what they're going to do. Like, I actually didn't want to watch this movie, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I remember you saying you were like, eh.
I saw the trailers and I was like, it's just going to be him going after Jamie Lee Curtis again. And even though the writing is a cut above, I'm like, I just don't want to do it. And so that's why the surprises had me liking it more than the previous one. It was much better than I expected. And I do want to see how they choose to end this new trilogy.
Yeah, it's called Halloween Ends, I think is what it...
Makes sense.
I'm also curious that this same director, David Gordon Green, is going to be the person who's doing the new Exorcist trilogy.
Okay.
Which he's doing sort of the same kind of loose. It's going to include the first Exorcist, a little bit of the second one.
Okay.
But then it's sort of going to kind of make its own continuity after that.
Okay. They kind of did that with the Exorcist TV show.
Yeah. And I wouldn't
that was
be
pretty good.
I wouldn't be super surprised if they don't incorporate a little bit of that because it was really well done and well received.
Now, Exorcist is a bigger... is a bigger thing to live up to than Halloween. And I love John Carpenter's original Halloween, but it is kind of like the best slasher movie you're going to ever do in a lot of ways. But Exorcist is like a whole nother level. It's like a great movie.
It is.
With really fine acting and more as disturbing as anything I've ever seen in some ways. Although I've been enjoying these movies, I'm not 100% sure you want to touch Exorcist. But he's clearly not incompetent, and he's willing to shake the boat.
Yeah, he brings a little bit more nuance than I expected.
At most turns, I suppose, in both of the last two movies, they would surprise me. So.
Yeah.
So I think we give it a recommendation.
I definitely do, especially if you like the last one.
Right on. Anything else we want to cover today?
No.
All right, that's a pretty good batch. I think I would, many of the movies you might recommended, I would also recommend, and hopefully people can use those as a bit of a guide to try some horror out. That's a good, because you tried a bunch of different stuff.
Yeah.
Why write a comedy?
If you do have kids, watch Muppet's Haunted Mansion. That was a lot of fun. I don't know if Randy had mentioned that or not. I can't remember.
If y'all did last week maybe, but we hadn't this
Yeah,
week.
No. It was a lot of fun. Awesome. And a good kind of Muppet movie.
All right, well, let's call it there. So until next time,
yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.